skyscrapers. Wax followed, watching as the man pushed himself in through a window on the top floor, some 12 or 14 stories up. Wax shot up into the sky, windows passing him in a blur. The city of Ellendale stretched out all around, smoke rising from coal plants, factories, and homes in countless spouts. He neared the top floor, one window to the left of where Marks had entered, and as he landed lightly on the stonework ledge, he tossed a coin toward the window Marks had used. The coin bounced against the glass. Gunfire sprayed out of the window. At the same time, Wax increased his weight and smashed through his own window by leaning against it, entering the building. He skidded on glass, raising Vindication toward the plaster wall separating him from Marks. Translucent blue lines spread around him, pointing in 1,000 different directions, highlighting bits of metal. The nails in a desk behind him were a frightened man in a suit cowered, the metal wires in the walls leading to electric lamps. Most importantly, a few lines pointed through the wall into the next room. These were faint. Obstructions weakened his allomantic sense. One of those lines quivered as someone in there turned and raised a gun. Wax rolled Vindication's cylinder and locked it into place. Haze killer round. He fired, then pushed, flaring his metal and drilling that bullet forward with as much force as he could. It tore through the wall as if it were paper. The metal in the next room dropped to the floor. Wax threw himself against the wall, increasing his weight, cracking the plaster. Another slam with his shoulder smashed through, and he broke into the next room, weapon raised, looking for his target. He found only a pool of blood soaking into the carpet and a discarded submachine gun. This room was some kind of clerk's office. Several men and women pressed against the floor, trembling. One woman raised a finger, pointing out a door. Wax gave her a nod and crouched against the wall next to the doorway, then cautiously glanced out. With a painful grating sound, a filing cabinet slid down the hallway toward him. Wax ducked back out of the way as it passed, then leaped out and aimed. His gun immediately lurched backward. Wax grabbed it with both hands, holding tight, but a second push launched his other pistol out of its holster. His feet started to skid, his gun hauling him backward, and he growled, but finally dropped Vindication. She tumbled all the way down the hall to fetch up beside the ruins of the filing cabinet, which had crashed into the wall there. He would have to come back for her once this was over. Marks stood at the other end of the hallway, lit by soft electric lights. He bled from a shoulder wound, his face hidden by the black and white mask.
"There are 1,000 criminals in this city far worse than I am," a muffled voice said from behind the mask. "And yet you hunt me, lawman. Why? I'm a hero of the people."
"You stopped being a hero weeks ago," Wax said, striding forward, mistcoat rustling, "when you killed a child."
"That wasn't my fault."
"You fired the gun, Marks. You might not have been aiming for the girl, but you fired the gun."
The thief stepped back. The sack slung on his shoulder had been torn, either by Wax's bullet or some shrapnel. It leaked banknotes. Marks glared at him through the mask, eyes barely visible in the electric light. Then he dashed to the side, holding his shoulder as he ran into another room. Wax pushed off the filing cabinet and threw himself in a rush down the hallway. He skidded to a stop before the door Marks had gone in, then pushed off the light behind, bending it against the wall and entering the room. Open window. Wax grabbed a handful of pens from a desk before throwing himself out of the window, 12 stories up. Banknotes fluttered in the air, trailing behind Marks as he plummeted. Wax increased his weight, trying to fall faster, but he had nothing to push against, and the increased weight helped only slightly against air resistance. Marks still hit the ground before him, then pushed away the coin he'd used to slow himself. A pair of dropped pens, with metal nibs, pushed ahead of himself into the ground was enough, barely, to slow Wax. Marks leaped away, bounding out over some street lamps. He bore no metal on his body that Max could spot, but he moved a lot more slowly than he had earlier, and he trailed blood. Wax followed him. Marks would be making for the breakouts, a slum where the people still covered for him. They didn't care that his robberies had turned violent. They celebrated that he stole from those who deserved it.
"Can't let him reach that safety," Wax thought, pushing himself up over a lamppost, then shoving on it behind him to gain speed.
He closed on his prey, who checked on Wax with a frantic glance over his shoulder. Wax raised one of the pens, gauging how risky it would be to try to hit Marks in the leg. He didn't want a killing blow. This man knew something. The slums were just ahead. Next bound, Wax thought, gripping the pen. Bystanders stared up from the sidewalks, watching the allomantic chase. He couldn't risk hitting one of them. He had to. One of those faces was familiar. Wax lost control of his push. Stunned by what he'd seen, he barely kept himself from breaking bones as he hit the street, rolling across cobbles. He came to a rest, mistcoat tassels twisted around his body. He drew himself up on hands and knees.
No. Impossible. No.
He scrambled across the street, ignoring a stomping black drestrier and its cursing rider.
That face. That face.
The last time he had seen that face, he had shot it in the forehead.
Bloody tan. The man who had killed Lessie.
A man was here,
Wax shouted, shoving through the crowd.
Long-fingered, thinning hair. A face almost like a bare skull. Did you see him? Did anyone see him?
People stared at him as if he were daft. Perhaps he was. Wax raised his hand to the side of his head.
Lord Waxillium?
He spun. Marcy had stopped her motor car nearby, and both she and Wayne were climbing out. Had she actually been able to tail him during his chase? No. No, he'd told her where he thought Marks would go.
Wax, mate? Wayne asked. You all right? What did he do, knock you from the air?
Something like that,
Wax mumbled, glancing about one last time.
Rusts, he thought. The stress is digging into my mind.
So he got away,
Marcy said, folding her arms, looking displeased.
Not yet, he didn't, Wax said. He's bleeding and dropping money. He'll leave a trail. Come on.
3.
I need you to stay behind as we go into those slums, Wayne said, determined to impress solemnity into his voice. It's not that I don't want your help. I do. It's just going to be too dangerous for you. You need to stay where I know you're safe. No arguments. I'm sorry.
Wayne, Wax said, walking past,
stop talking to your hat and get over here.
Wayne sighed, patting his hat and then forcing himself to put it down and leave it in the motor car.
Wax was a right good fellow, but there were a lot of things he didn't understand. Women, for one. Hats, for another.
Wayne jogged over to where Wax and Marcy peered into the breakouts. It seemed a different world in there. The sky inside was strung with clotheslines, derelict bits of clothing dangling like hanged men. Wind blew out of the place, happy to escape, carrying with it uncertain scents. Food half-cooked, bodies half-washed, streets half-cleaned. The tall, compact tenements cast deep shadows even in the afternoon. As if this were the place, dusk came for a drink and a chat before sauntering out for its evening duty.
The Lord Mistborn didn't want there to be slums in the city, you know,
Marcy said as the three of them entered.
He tried hard to prevent them from growing up. Built nice buildings for the poor. Tried to make them last.
Wax nodded, absently moving a coin across his knuckles as he walked. He seemed to have lost his guns somewhere. Had he bummed some coins off Marcy? It never was fair. When Wayne borrowed coins off folks, he got yelled at. He did forget to ask sometimes, but he always offered a good trade. As they penetrated deeper into the breakouts, Wayne lagged behind the other two.
Need a good hat, he thought. A hat was important.
So he listened for some coughing.
Ah.
He found the chap nestled up beside a doorway, a ratty blanket draped over his knees. You could always find his type in a slum. Old, clinging to life like a man on a ledge, his lungs half full with various unsavory fluids. The old man hacked into a glove-wrapped hand as Wayne settled down on the steps beside him.
What now?
The man said.
Who are you? What now?
Wayne repeated.
Who are you? I'm nobody,
the man said, then spat to the side.
Dirty odor. I ain't done nothing. I'm nobody,
Wayne repeated, taking his flask from the pocket of his duster.
Dirty outer. I ain't done nothing.
Good accent, that was. Real mumbly, a classic vintage, wrapped in a blanket of history. Closing his eyes and listening, Wayne thought he could imagine what people sounded like years ago. He held out the flask of whiskey.
"You trying to poison me?"
the man asked. He clipped off words, left out half the sounds.
"You trying to poison me?"
Wayne repeated, working his jaw as if his mouth were full of bits of rock he kept trying to chew. Some northern fields mix in this one for sure. He opened his eyes and tipped the whiskey at the man who smelled it, then took a sip, then a swig, then a gulp.
"So?"
the man asked.
"You an idiot? I was sown as an idiot. A real kind, that was born that way. Well, you seem all right anyway." "Well, you seem all right anyway,"
Wayne said, standing up. He reached over to take the man's old cotton cap off his head, then gestured toward the whiskey flask.
"In trade?"
the man asked.
"Boy, you are an idiot."
Wayne pulled on the cap.
"Could you say another word that starts with H for me?"
"Huh?"
"Rusting wonderful," Wayne said.
He hopped back down the steps onto the street and ditched his duster in a cranny, and along with it his dueling canes, unfortunately. He kept his wooden knuckle bones, though. The clothing underneath his duster was rough stock, not so different from what they wore in these slums. Buttoned shirt, trousers, suspenders. He rolled up the sleeves as he walked. The clothing was worn, patched in a few places. He wouldn't trade it for the world. Took years to get clothing that looked right. Used. Lived in. Be slow to trust a man with clothing that was too new. You didn't get to wear new, clean clothing by doing honest work. Wax and Marcy had paused up ahead, speaking to some old women with scarves on their heads and bundles in their arms. Wayne could almost hear what they were saying.
"We don't know nothing."
"He came running past here mere moments ago," Wax would say. "Surely you—"
"We don't know nothing. We didn't see nothing."
Wayne wandered over to where a group of men sat under a dirty cloth awning while eating bruised fruit.
"Who are those outers?"
Wayne asked as he sat down, using the accent he'd just picked up from the old man. They didn't even question him. A slum like this had a lot of people, too many to know everyone, but you could easily tell if someone belonged or not. And Wayne belonged.
"Connors for sure,"
one of the men said. He had a head like an overturned bowl, hairless and too flat.
"They want someone,"
another man said. Rust and ruin, the chap's face was so pointy you could have used it to plow a field.
"Connors only come here if they want to arrest someone. They've never cared about us and never will." "If they did care,"
Bowlhead said,
"they'd do something about all those factories and power plants dumping ash on us. We ain't supposed to live in ash anymore. Harmony said it, he did."
Wayne nodded. Good point, that. These building walls, they were ashen. Did people care about that, on the outside? No. Not as long as they didn't have to live in here. He didn't miss the glares Wax and Marcy drew, pointed at them by people who passed behind or who pulled windows closed up above.
This is worse, Wayne thought. Worse than normal.
He'd have to talk to Wax about it. But for now, there was a job to do.
"They are looking for something."
"Stay out of it," Bullhead said.
Wayne grunted.
"Maybe there's money in it." "You turn in one of our own,"
Bullhead said with a scowl.
"I recognize you. Edip's son, aren't you?"
Wayne glanced away, noncommittal.
"You listen here, son,"
Bullhead said, wagging his finger.
"Don't cross the corner, and don't be a rat." "I ain't a rat,"
Wayne said testily. He wasn't. But sometimes a man just needed cash.
"They're after marks. I overheard him. There's 1,000 notes on his head, there is."
"He grow up here,"
Plowface said.
"He's one of us." "He killed that girl,"
Wayne said.
"That's a lie,"
Bullhead said.
"Don't you go talking to Connors, son. I mean it." "Fine, fine,"
Wayne said, moving to rise.
"I'll just go. You'll sit back down," Bullhead said, "or I'll wrap you something good on your head, I will."
Wayne sighed, sitting back down.
You olders always talk about us, and don't know how it is these days, working in one of the factories. We know more than you think,
Bullhead said, handing Wayne a bruised apple.
Eat this. Stay out of trouble, and don't go where I can't see you.
Wayne grumbled, but sat back and bit into the apple. It didn't taste half bad. He ate the whole thing, then helped himself to a couple more. It happened soon enough. The men of the fruit-eating group broke apart, leaving Wayne with a basket full of cores. They split with a few amicable jibes at one another, each of the four men claiming he had some important task to be about. Wayne stuffed another apple in each pocket, then stood up and sauntered off after Bullhead. He tailed the fellow fairly easily, nodding occasionally at people who nodded back as if they knew him. It was the hat. Put on a man's hat, surround your mind with his way of thinking, and it changed you. A man in dock worker's clothing passed by, shoulders slumped, whistling a sad tune. Wayne picked up the melody. Rough life that was, working the docks. You had to commute each day on the canal boats. Either that or find a bed out near the waterfront of the bay, where you were about as likely to get stabbed as at breakfast. He'd lived that life as a youth. Had the scars to prove it, he did. But as a chap grew, he wanted more to his days than a fight on every corner and women who couldn't remember his name one day to the next. Bullhead ducked into an alley. Well, every rusting street in here felt like an alley. Bullhead entered an alley's alley. Wayne stepped up to the side of the tiny roadway, then burned bend alloy. Allomancy was a useful trick, that it was. Burning the metal set up a nice little bubble of sped-up time around him. He strolled around the corner, staying inside the bubble. It didn't move when he did, but he could move within it. Yep, there he was, Bullhead himself, crouching beside a rubbish pile, waiting to see if anyone followed him. Wayne had almost made the bubble too big and caught the man in it. Sloppy, sloppy, Wayne thought. A mistake like that on the docks could cost a man his life. He fished a ratty blanket out of the part of the rubbish pile that was inside his bubble, then wandered back around the corner and dropped the bubble. Inside the speed bubble, he'd have been moving so quickly Bullhead wouldn't have seen more than a blur, if that. He wouldn't think anything of it, Wayne was certain. If he were wrong, he'd eat his hat. Well, one of Wax's hats, at least. Wayne found a set of steps and settled down. He pulled his cap down half over his eyes, sidled up to the wall in a comfortable position, and spread the blanket around himself. Just another homeless drunk. Bullhead was a careful one. He waited inside the alley a whole 5 minutes before creeping out, looking back and forth, then hastening to a building across the street. He knocked, whispered something, and was let in. Wayne yawned, stretched, and tossed aside the blanket. He crossed the street to the building that Bullhead had entered, then started checking the shuttered windows. The ancient shutters were so old, a good sneeze might have knocked them off. He had to be careful to avoid getting splinters in his cheeks as he listened at each window in turn. The men of the slums had an odd sense of morality to them. They wouldn't turn in one of their own to the constables, not even for a reward. But then again, a chap needed to eat. Wouldn't a man like Marks want to hear just how loyal his friends were?
"Was a pair of Connors for sure," Wayne heard at a window. "1,000 notes is a lot, Marks. A whole lot. Now, I'm not saying you can't trust the lads. There's not a bad alloy in the bunch. I can say that a little encouragement will help them feel better about their loyalty."
Ratting out a friend? Completely off limits. Extorting a friend? Well, that was just good business sense. And if Marks didn't act grateful, then maybe he hadn't been a friend after all. Wayne grinned, slipping his sets of wooden knuckle bones over his fingers. He stepped back, then charged the building. He hit the shutters with one shoulder, crashing through, then tossed up a speed bubble the moment he hit the floor. He rolled and came up on his feet in front of Marks, who was inside the speed bubble. The man still wore his red trousers, though he'd removed his mask and was bandaging his shoulder. He snapped his head up, displaying a surprised face with bushy eyebrows and large lips.
Rusts. No wonder the fellow normally wore a mask.
Wayne swung at his chin, laying him out with one punch. Then he spun, fists up, but the other half-dozen occupants of the room, including Bowlhead, stood frozen just outside the edge of his speed bubble.
Now that was right lucky.
Wayne grinned, heaving marks up onto his shoulder. He took his knuckles off, slipping them into his pocket, and got out an apple. He took a juicy bite, waved farewell to Bowlhead, who looked forward with glassy eyes, frozen, then tossed marks out the window and followed after. Once he passed beyond the edge of his speed bubble, it automatically collapsed.
"What the hell was that?"
Bowlhead yelled inside. Wayne heaved the unconscious marks up onto his shoulder again, then wandered back down the road, chewing on his apple.
"Let me talk to the next ones," Marcy said. "Maybe I can get them to say something."
She felt Waxillium's eyes on her. He thought she was trying to prove himself to him. Once he'd have been right. Now she was a constable, fully credentialed and in the city's employ. This was her job. Waxillium didn't agree with her decision, but her actions were not subject to his approval. Together, they walked up to a group of young outcasts sitting on the steps of the slums. The three boys watched them with suspicion, their skin dirty, their too big clothing tied at the waists and ankles. That was the style, apparently, for youths of the streets. They smelled of the incense they'd been smoking in their pipes. Marcy stepped up to them.
"We're looking for a man."
"If you need a man," one of the boys said, looking her up and down.
"I'm right here."
"Oh, please,"
Marcy said.
"You're what, 9?
"Hey, she knows how long it is,"
the boy said, laughing and grabbing his crotch.
"Have you been peeking at me, lady?"
Well, that's a blush, Marcy thought. Not terribly professional.
Fortunately, she'd spent time around Wayne and his occasional colorful metaphors. Blushes would happen. She pressed onward.
"He came shooting through here less than an hour ago. Wounded, trailing blood, wearing red. I'm sure you know who I'm speaking of."
"Yeah, the man of ours,"
one of the boys said, laughing and referencing a figure from old nursemaid tales.
"I know him."
Treat them like a belligerent witness, she thought. At a trial. Keep them talking.
She needed to learn how to deal with people like these boys in the real world, not just in sterile practice rooms.
"Yes, the man of ours," Marcy said. "Where did he go?"
"To the edge of dusk," the boy said. "Haven't you heard the stories?"
"I'm fond of stories,"
Marcy said, slipping a few coins from her pocketbook. She held them up. Bribery felt like cheating, but, well, she wasn't in court. The three boys eyed the coins, a sudden hunger flashing in their eyes. They covered it quickly, but perhaps showing off money in this place wasn't terribly wise.
"Let's hear a story," Marcy said, "about where this man of ours might be staying. The location of dusk, if you will. Here in these tenements."
"We might know that," one of the boys said. "Though, you know, stories cost a lot. More than that."
Behind her, something clinked. Waxillium had gotten out a few coins, too. The boys glanced at those, eager, until Waxillium flipped one up into the air and pushed until it was lost. The boys grew quiet immediately.
"Talk to the lady," Waxillium said softly, with an edge to his voice. "Stop wasting our time."
Marcy turned to him, and behind her the boys made their decision. They scattered, obviously not wanting to deal with an alomancer.
"That was very helpful,"
Marcy said, folding her arms.
"Thank you so much."
"They were going to lie to you," Waxillium said, glancing over his shoulder. "And we were drawing the wrong kind of attention."
"I realized they were going to lie," Marcy said. "I was going to catch them in it. Attacking someone's false story is often one of the best methods of interrogation."
"Actually," Waxillium said, "the best method of interrogation involves a drawer and someone's fingers."
"Actually," Marcy said, "it does not. Studies show that forced interrogation results in bad information almost all the time. Anyway, what is wrong with you today, Waxillium? I realize you've been flaunting your tough, rough lawman persona lately.
I have not.
You have, she said. And I can see why. Out in the roughs, you acted the gentleman lawman. You yourself told me you clung to civilization to bring it with you. Well, here you're around lords all the time. You're practically drowning in civilization. So instead, you lean on being the roughs lawman to bring a little old-fashioned justice to the city.
You've thought about this a lot, he said, turned away from her, scanning the street.
Rust and ruin. He thought she was infatuated with him. Arrogant, brutish, idiot. She puffed out and stalked away. She was not infatuated. He had made it clear there would be nothing between them, and he was engaged to her sister. That was that. Couldn't the two of them have a professional relationship now?
Wayne lounged on the steps leading up to a nearby building, watching them and sloppily taking bites out of an apple.
And where have you been?
Marcy asked, walking up to him.
Apple, Wayne said, handing another one toward her. He's not too bruised.
No, thank you. Some of us have been trying to find a killer, not a meal.
Oh, that.
Wayne kicked at something beside him on the ground, hidden in the shadow of the steps.
Yeah, took care of that for you.
You took... Wayne, that's a person at your feet. Rusts, he's bleeding.
Sure is, Wayne said. Not my fault at all, that. I did knock him upside the head, though.
Marcy raised a hand to her mouth.
It was him. Wayne, where... how...
Waxillium gently pushed her aside. She hadn't seen him approach. He knelt down, checking Marx's wound. Waxillium then looked up at Wayne and nodded, the two sharing an expression they often exchanged. The closest Marcy had been able to figure, it meant something between nice work and you're a total git. I wanted to do that.
Let's get him to the constabulary offices, Waxillium said, lifting the unconscious Marx.
Yes, fine, Marcy said. But aren't you going to ask how he did this? Where he's been?
Wayne has his methods, Waxillium said. In a place like this, they're far better than my own.
You knew,
she said, leveling a finger at Waxillium.
You knew we weren't going to get anywhere asking questions.
I suspected, Waxillium said. But Wayne needs space to try his methods, on account of my being so incredible, Wayne added. So I did my best to find Marx on my own, on account of him being unable to accept that I'm better at this sort of thing than he is, in case Wayne failed, which never happens.
Wayne grinned and took a bite of his apple, hopping off his steps to walk beside Waxillium.
Except that one time, and that other one time. But those don't matter, on account of my getting hit to the head enough times that I can't remember them.
Marcy sighed inwardly, falling into step with the two. They had so much history that they moved in concert subconsciously, like two dancers who had performed together countless times. That made life particularly difficult for the newcomer who tried to perform with them.
Well, Marcy said to Wayne, you could at least tell me what you did. Perhaps I could learn from your methods.
Nah, Wayne said. Won't work for you. You're too pretty. In an unpretty sort of way to me, mind you. Let's not go around that tree again.
Wayne, sometimes you completely baffle me.
Only sometimes? Waxillium asked.
I can't give her all I got, mate, Wayne said, thumbs behind his suspenders. Gotta save some for everyone else. I dole it out with no respect for privilege, class, sex, or mental capacity. I'm a Roston saint, I am.
But how?
Marcy said.
How did you find him? Did you make some of these people talk?
Nah, Wayne said. I made them not talk. They're better at that. Comes from practice, I suspect.
You should take lessons, Waxillium added.
Marcy sighed as they approached the entrance to the breakouts. The human flotsam who earlier had cluttered the stairwells and alleyways in here had melted away, perhaps finding the attention of several lawmen too discomforting. Waxillium stiffened, Wayne did as well.
What?
Marcy began, right as Waxillium dropped Marks and reached for his mistcoat pocket. Wayne shoved his shoulder into Maracy, pushing her away as something zipped down out of the air and clacked against the paving stones where they had been standing. More projectiles followed, though